Welcome to iForum Rx, where we explore the evidence that matters in ambulatory care pharmacy practice. Today, we'll be exploring the China Stroke Primary Prevention Trial, or the CSPP study. Here to examine the results of the CSPP study is Jamie Kerner, who is on faculty at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, at their Columbia campus, and an ambulatory care practitioner. Thanks for being with us today, Jamie.
Thank you for having me.
So, if you had to briefly summarize in four sentences or less the China Stroke Primary Prevention Trial to someone who hasn't read the paper, what would you say?
I would say this was a randomized, double-blind study. It was completed with a really large population of patients, and within this population of patients, they had hypertension but didn't have a history of MI or a history of stroke. They were randomized to either receive the enalapril 10 milligrams with the folic acid 0.8 milligrams as one single tablet or just enalapril alone. And the primary outcome they were looking for was first occurrence of ischemic or hemorrhagic stroke. And what they showed with the results was that they had a 21% reduction in first stroke with patients that had that folic acid supplementation, but more importantly, it was more pronounced in patients that had a lower baseline folic acid level going into the study.
So my second question, in critically examining the study methodology, what would you say are the major strengths, potential weaknesses, and limitations of this study?
Well, I think the trial definitely had a lot of strengths. They had a large study group. They did randomize those patients. They double-blinded the study, and then it also had a placebo control. The dosages of the medications that they used were appropriate, 10 milligrams of enalapril, which is one that we would use in practice, as well as having 0.8 milligrams of folic acid. We have kind of a ceiling effect whenever we do supplement with folic acid, and that 0.8 milligrams is what we see as the ceiling effect. Additionally, they tried to look at other variables that could affect the outcomes, and one of them was looking at a gene variant of the methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase enzyme, or the MTHFR enzyme, and that's an enzyme that's responsible for regulating folate metabolism. And so they tried to identify these other variables that could affect the results. Some of the limitations, there wasn't a way to control for dietary folic acid, and they really didn't control for that. And one other thing is looking at how limited the generalizability of the study may have been. So this was done in a population of patients that are in an environment where there is no folic acid supplementation in their diet. And in the United States, we do have folic acid supplementation.
So over the years, several vitamins, including folic acid, B complex, and even vitamin E, have all been touted as having cardiovascular effects. Indeed, if we look at epidemiological studies, they have shown that people who take these vitamins and other supplements have a lower risk of MI and stroke and live longer. But when tested in rigorous, prospective, randomized clinical trials, none of these vitamins have shown a significant benefit. Why do you think the results of this trial are different?
Well, one of the things that the authors identified in the study is that a lot of the other trials that have been done were done in areas where dietary folate intake is high. And this trial was completed in a population of patients where they do not supplement folic acid and they don't have that fortification in their diet. So we really are starting with a population of patients where dietary intake may be lower. So where this is important is if we have a population of patients that's already receiving enough folic acid in their diet, supplementing them with more may not be very helpful, as opposed to a population of patients that were starting off with maybe a lower baseline level. So there were a few things with this study that was a little different from what's been done before. This trial really tried to focus on the primary prevention of stroke. So that was their primary outcome, where that is usually just a secondary outcome or part of a composite in some of the other trials. And the other thing that they did in this study that was a little different was that they did measure the patient's baseline levels of folic acid as well as the change over the course of the study. And this helped us identify that the patients that had the lower levels at baseline tended to have the greater cardiovascular benefit.
Now, I want you to imagine that you have an older adult with no previous history of cardiovascular disease. They may have smoked in the past, they have high blood pressure, they have elevated LDL cholesterol, and they ask you for your advice as to whether they should take folic acid or not. What would you tell this patient, and should we routinely include folic acid in antihypertensive meds as a public health measure?
So I think the first thing that I would address with this patient is looking at those preventative treatments that we have strong evidence for. So looking at if the patient is on a statin and what the appropriate dose would be, looking at the antihypertensive that they should be on, as well as whether the patient should be on aspirin or not. So I think really still focusing on having those things that we know work for prevention would be where I would start. Other things that I need to consider from what we know from this study, what is the patient's baseline diet? So how much folic acid are they actually getting in their diet? If they're eating a lot of grains, because those are what would be fortified with the folic acid, if a patient has a high level of that in their diet, then I may not need to look further and would consider them to be good with their folic acid. If the patient doesn't eat a lot of grains, then I may consider doing folic acid levels to see where the patient is at baseline, because we know that if they're low in their baseline folic acid, then they would benefit from supplementation. Whereas if they're a patient that has already enough folic acid in their diet, they may not benefit from adding another pill. The other thing would be looking at if the patient is taking a multivitamin or not. Looking at their dietary habits, looking at whether or not they're taking that multivitamin, I think are good baseline options, so we're not doing unnecessary tests and adding unnecessary medications to the patient's regimen. So as far as a public health measure, I don't think we in the United States are at a point where we need to consider putting folic acid in antihypertensive medications. Just because we already fortify so many of the foods, it may be something to consider in other countries around the world where that is not the case. But as far as for the United States, I think it's not a step we need to take at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Kerner, for your insightful comments and analysis of the China Stroke Primary Prevention Trial and the use of folic acid to prevent stroke. It is clear from your comments that folic acid supplementation is a useful intervention in patient populations where folate deficiency is relatively common, but in the United States, routine supplementation is unlikely to be of benefit. However, I think we all would agree we should be on the lookout for those patients who may not be getting enough folic acid in their diet. What do you think? Folic acid is cheap and available over the counter. Should we routinely recommend multivitamins with at least 0.8 milligrams of folic acid to our older patients with high blood pressure? Leave us a comment. Until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.